From Camp Hill to Johnstown, Phillipsburg to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, as businesses look to fully reopen in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, they are looking to the state for some protection against liability lawsuits. The legislature is beginning to take action. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Matthew Briette for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And the Wolf administration is trying to defeat two proposed constitutional amendments designed to restore the balance of power during declared emergencies by using misleading wording on the ballot question. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Biden administration floated the idea of a so-called vaccination passport this past week, and the idea was quickly shot down by leaders of the Pennsylvania House. Majority Leader Kerry Benninghoff said Penns Woods would not follow states like New York that are developing documentation of individuals who have either tested negative or who have been vaccinated against COVID-19. Benninghoff called the idea a, quote, unfathomable government intrusion into people's personal lives, particularly their private medical information. There will be several special elections in the May primary to fill vacant state Senate and House seats. The most competitive of those races is likely to be in northeastern Pennsylvania, where voters in the 22nd state senatorial district will fill the seat left vacant by the resignation of former state senator John Blake. Republicans have nominated Lackawanna County Commissioner Chris Chermak as their candidate. He will square off against state representative Marty Flynn, who has been nominated by district Democrats. While the seat has been historically Democrat, it has become a battleground in presidential and other high-profile races. Meanwhile, in the 60th State House District, the GOP has nominated Abby Major as their candidate for a special election to be held in May. The seat is vacant due to the recent resignation of longtime State Representative Jeff Pyle, who has been battling ill health. Major was Pyle's chief of staff. That district includes parts of Butler, Armstrong, and Indiana counties. It's considered to be a safe Republican seat. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Efforts to provide liability protection to businesses trying to reopen as COVID-19 restrictions ease ended in failure last year when Governor Tom Wolf vetoed the measure. Now, legislative Republicans are trying again. Here to discuss the importance of such protections is our Capitol Watch crew, David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, and Matthew Briette from Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And I've got your Capitol Watch all-stars here, my main man, Matt Briette, President and CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks for being on the show.
Good to be with you, David.
And Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Great to be back again. Thank you.
Well, you know, the wheel keeps turning, and I think that people are pretty much sick of the COVID lockdown, and that it seems like there are cracks in the facade of the sort of government control that people like Tom Wolf have enjoyed just far too much in the course of this this healthcare emergency. And so there's a lot of unfinished business, things that we've got to get cleaned up to get Pennsylvania back on track and to return to something like normal life, including the normal functioning of our institutions of self-government.
Well, that's a big challenge, David, because we've shifted responsibility to, well, instead of having personal responsibility, we're expecting everybody else to take care of these things. And one in particular, and I think you're going to you're alluding to this, is what we're doing to our businesses. And as they try to protect customers and employees throughout this pandemic, we haven't provided them protections against the the trial lawyers that see opportunities every time there's some crisis to exploit. And I mean, I see it even with the relaxing of some of the regulations, the executive orders from the governor. Some businesses are like being pretty stringent because they're fearful of attacks of lawsuits.
Right.
And so there's still, I think, that it's unknown. It's unclear. I mean, Governor Wolf doesn't even know what he's imposing on businesses or his own orders. And so this lack of clarity and lack of protection has created an environment, I think, that's very difficult for a lot of our businesses and how they're going to make sure that they protect their employees and their customers.
I think this is especially true for the small businesses who aren't out of the woods. I mean, they are already struggling. We know they were hit hardest by the closures last year, and they're still struggling to come back. Despite the PPP loans, despite some of the assistance they've gotten, there are a lot of businesses out there who are still struggling, especially restaurants, those types of businesses. So, you know, if they should face a lawsuit as a result of this COVID crisis or any allegation, or anyone who thinks they may have possibly contracted the virus on their premises, that could be the death knell, really, for a small business, sure.
Because then the entity that is being accused, that they have to go and prove a negative.
Right.
And that again, because we want to safely reopen the economy, we need everybody to go through the process of doing the safeguards and all that stuff. And so, you know, what's being discussed in Harrisburg is providing limited safe harbor from lawsuits for those entities, businesses, schools, other organizations that are abiding by the CDC guidelines. And this does two things. Number one, it, you know, makes those institutions like more survivable economically, whether it is, a healthcare entity or a business or an education entity. But the other thing that goes along with that, which is also good, is that it's an inducement for those entities to abide by the guidelines. And so the presumption would be, if somebody gets sick, that you didn't get sick at the place where the safeguards were in place. And so Tom Wolf could have, through an executive order, given these temporary limited protections, chose not to. The General Assembly passed legislation overwhelmingly bipartisan to provide these safeguards to our Pennsylvanians, and Governor Wolf vetoed it. So, you know, I'm told that the General Assembly, that the State House is going to come back around again and take another stab at this. The composition of the legislature is slightly changed. I don't know what that'll do to the vote. They were very close to a veto override. But it's just the sort of thing where in dozens of other states, the governors and legislatures have given these safeguards, even Democrat governors like Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan.
Well, this may have to be one of those times, David, like we've seen in the past, that Governor Wolf has vetoed great ideas, but the legislature's come back and proposed something similar, and he finally goes along with it. That would be my hope, is that our General Assembly would continue to press for these necessary protections, and that Governor Wolf would push back on one of his primary campaign funders, the trial lawyers, and say, okay, we, in order for our economy to pick back up, I think that it's just going to be critical for Pennsylvania moving forward, not just emerging out of this pandemic, but I think for our long-term well-being, that we get these things right and that we demonstrate to our employers and employees that we're going to get them right.
The governor of Pennsylvania has incredible emergency powers, and that Tom Wolf and his people have max that out, and they're looking to claw back more. And that in response to that, there'll be a constitutional questions on the ballot in the primary. And if Pennsylvanians vote yes, it will curtail the governor's ability to have an emergency declaration and keep it in place without the approval of the legislature.
Yeah, and the reason this is necessary is because last year the state Supreme Court actually decided that the legislature cannot overturn a governor's emergency declaration, despite the plain language, I think, in the statute. They determined that the governor could actually veto the resolution that the General Assembly passed. So they did pass a resolution last year overturning the emergency declaration. So it would force the governor's hand and actually force him to talk to the legislature and open up the decision-making process a bit to more, more people and more stakeholders in the process, because he's been holding his decision-making very close and not involving the legislature. So they passed it last year, and he, after the Supreme Court decision, vetoed it. So that's the reason why we need a constitutional amendment, actually two constitutional amendments specifically. There are three on the ballot this year on May 18th, so be on the lookout for them. But basically, they would allow the General Assembly to overturn the governor's emergency declaration and not allow the governor to continue forever renewing emergency declarations. It would limit it to 21 days, and it couldn't be renewed without the General Assembly agreeing to that declaration. So we need to get that amendment, those two amendments, passed. So vote yes, for sure. We really want to see a yes vote on those amendments. That's the only thing that I'm aware of at this point that could stop the governor and his emergency powers.
I think what's really important in this, and Rebecca's exactly right, the argument that the governor is making is that, well, this takes away his powers to exercise important decision-making and flexibility of the executive. And that is just flat wrong. It is not true.
Correct.
In fact, 21 days, he would be able to operate for 3 weeks if there's an emergency. And frankly, if there is an emergency that goes to 22-20, I guarantee you the legislature will say, yes, we extend your emergency declaration. But it creates the conversation that simply didn't have to happen. I mean, the governor had 90 days, and then he could extend it, and he's extended it indefinitely with his veto pen, and then the rewriting of the law by the state Supreme Court. He's basically had unlimited and unilateral powers that nobody can check. It would be easier to remove him from office,
correct,
impeach him and remove him from office, than it would be to overturn his veto.
And it actually brings it more into line with other states, the emergency
yes.
powers that other governors have. Ours is just far out of whack after that Supreme Court decision last year. I think nobody intended governors to have unlimited emergency powers, and this would bring it more into line with what other states do.
I mean, even New York, controlled by Democrats, Democrat governor, Democrat Senate, Democrat House, has rescinded the powers of that governor. I mean, we're seeing this kind of clawing back of powers that really require legislative and executive branches to communicate and decide what the best path forward is. And so this isn't only about Governor Wolf. This is about any governor in the future that might have, well, frankly, this power-hungry grab that we've seen here in Pennsylvania.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor, from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. So, I mean, again, this is a fundamental American concept that that political authority is justly derived from the consent of the governed, and that because of the way that Pennsylvania's emergency declaration law has been interpreted, that we've had essentially government by cabal, that the governor not only has not listened to the people's elected representatives, but like he hasn't reached out to the stakeholders on pretty much anything since the disaster declaration went into effect.
And he, in fact, even was being deferential decision-making to someone who's unelected and an appointee of his, so that he was allowing the Secretary of Health to basically dictate the economic, our education policy. I mean, everything was essentially coming from one person that is unelected in the state. And that's why having the legislature involved, the direct elected people, our House and Senate, was so important, yet that was sidelined because of the governor's go-it-alone approach and the support from the Supreme Court.
Well, and this is something else that, troubles me, and I know that you guys have heard me talk about this before, where it seems as though you have these ambitious politicians who, even though they take an oath to uphold the Constitution, they really aren't interested in that. That they want to maximize the powers of their offices. Like, nobody seems content to just exercise the responsibilities of that are duly delegated to them. That everybody wants to build a little empire and to accrue more power.
But it's for your good,
well,
David.
And that's what's even more frightening. It's deeply unhealthy. It's deeply unhealthy. We need, especially the people entrusted with the powers of high office, to respect the limits of the authority and remember first and foremost that they are only the temporary trustees of these offices, exercising powers that belong to the people.
Well, I think that that's where I am encouraged, and I see this. Well, whether it's what we were talking about, the General Assembly going at it again of, you know, liability protection, what we're seeing in other states where legislatures are overriding governors, that whether it's their vetoes or their refusal to surrender their powers. So we're seeing, I mean, this is the brilliance of our founders, you know, what they gave us with our form of government. And those tensions, those checks and balances, the separation of powers, all of these things are why, you know, the American experiment has lasted as long as it has. I mean, it is a genius that if you're a student of history, you understand that we've long outlasted the vast majority of nations that have existed in the history of mankind. And I think we owe a lot to our form of government that has checks and balances, that balances out those tensions between a legislature and an executive.
And as the listeners of the program hear me say many, many times, it comes down to you and exercising your citizenship and living life with your brain turned on.
And it's not a spectator sport, right, David?
It is not a spectator sport. So thank you for doing your part to keep our system going. And part of that is by choosing to be informed. And I hope that part of that is choosing to be here and to listen to us.
Well, I mean, expanding on this sort of executive overreach and where we've gotten in a lot of areas in the American political system, I mean, we've talked on the show here about regulations and the need for regulatory reform, and that's sort of a subset of this. And I hope you're right, Matt. I hope this is like a turning point, a trend where we're starting to see more of a focus on reining in those executives a bit, because I think we'd all agree that regulations, the government's regulations, have reached a point where they're crushing, you know, economic development. They're really impinging on freedoms in some places, and I hope that sort of, you know, turning point that we're beginning to focus on the executive also reaches down into regulatory powers, because I think that's also a big problem that sort of upset the balance of power here amongst the branches.
You're absolutely right about that, Rebecca, and that falls to our legislators, that too often, especially at the congressional level, that Congress will pass laws that are vague and that delegate an awful lot of authority to the executive branch regulatory agencies to come up with the rules. And that really sets the law, like how it's going to be experienced day by day, you know, by the people who are regulated. And we need our legislators to legislate.
Yes.
And not just hand that authority off to the executive branch. We need them to take back those powers and set things right in that way.
Right. And I think, you know, we've developed this huge body of regulations that, like I said, is really crushing freedom and crushing our economy. And what happens is they're implemented by the state agencies, which are controlled by the governor or the president in the case of the federal government. And those state agencies are sort of self-perpetuating. they publish more regulations in order to, you know, have a job to enforce. And,
right.
And it's sort of a self-perpetuating a system that we really need to get a handle on. But you're right. It's going to take legislative
will
in order to break those regulations down, I think.
David, this kind of goes to your comments about taking a constitutional oath. Is that it's a good suggestion, but it's also an example of where we're seeing that too many politicians are assuming they can do whatever they want until they're checked by a court or some ruling, instead of saying, look, my powers are limited, that government only gives me certain powers and I cannot do anything else. It's that mindset and, unfortunately, philosophy that far too many have come into office. They don't feel limited by our Constitution. They feel, I've got unlimited power until someone tells me I can't do something.
Yeah, and it's a question of conscience. It's also a question of humility.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need government to do the things that it's supposed to do, those things that it's allowed to do under the Constitution. We need government to do those things, do them well, hopefully do them affordably, and then stop. The stopping part is really important.
But I think it comes down to having confidence in people to make the right decisions and use their freedoms responsibly and wisely. And so few politicians have confidence in the people.
Well, it goes to the humility. They believe that they own superior knowledge, unfortunately, far more than you peons to be able to make decisions for your own lives.
Well, we're going to make decisions for ourselves on May 18th, so vote yes. And that's all the time we have for this week's program. We'll go around the horn. Matt, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing?
Well, usually go to thecommonwealthpartners.com, but today go to voteyespa.com to learn more about these constitutional amendments and why you need to vote yes, yes, yes on the three ballot questions. So voteyespa.com.
Voteyespa.com. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to learn about you and your group and the things that you're doing?
Sure. They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and voteyespa.com. And for Matt and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening. We will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. There are a number of ways in which the socialist democratic left is especially adept at advancing its policy agenda. Chief among them is giving nice-sounding but totally misleading names to their initiatives. As a result, they are able to rally support that would not be there if the true nature of the policy were widely known. For example, the Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare, has been anything but affordable and was a major step to the ultimate goal of a national single-payer healthcare system. Most recently, the American Rescue Plan Act, purporting to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic, proved to be a vehicle for funding a wide-ranging left-wing wish list. Here in Pennsylvania, the left is employing that tactic to mislead the public on the impact of two proposed state constitutional amendments that will appear on the May primary ballot to restore checks and balances to the process of declaring emergencies. Governor Tom Wolf's flagrant abuse of his emergency powers during the COVID-19 pandemic has made the amendments necessary. Wolf has used his emergency powers to decimate the state's economy, causing many small businesses to shut their doors and forcing hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians onto the unemployment rolls. State law clearly gives the legislature the power to curb such excess, but a state Supreme Court, dominated by activist justices beholden to the governor and big labor, essentially rewrote the law, allowing Wolf to veto any measure passed by the legislature designed to place a check on his powers. A system of checks and balances is core to our American system of government. That is why the Founding Fathers divided power between the three branches of government with the intent that the legislature would enact laws, the executive would enforce and administer the law, and the judiciary would interpret the law. In Penn's Woods, that system has broken down. Governor Wolf has refused to abide by or even consult and cooperate with the legislature, while the Supreme Court has resorted to rewriting the law. As a result, Wolf has governed by executive fiat and the power of the legislature has been emasculated. To restore the balance of power, the legislature has proposed amending the state constitution to restore what had previously been settled law, giving lawmakers the ability to end a gubernatorial declaration of emergency. The process of amending the state constitution is complex. The proposed amendment had to be approved by two consecutive sessions of the General Assembly, which it has, and now must be approved by voters in a statewide referendum. That brings us to the left's latest rhetorical misdirection. It falls to the Pennsylvania Department of State to write the wording of the actual question to be placed on the May primary ballot. The department is under the control of the governor, who is fighting hard to have the amendments defeated. As a result, wording of the question is complex, confusing, and totally misleading. Wolf's State Department claims the wording, quote, fairly, accurately, and clearly apprised the voter of the issue to be voted on, end quote. It does not. The wording makes it appear the amendment would remove checks and balances, when in fact it restores checks and balances. The wording also employs the usual left-wing scare tactic by making it appear that the legislature would end such emergencies, quote, regardless of the severity of the crisis, which is not the case. State Senate Majority Leader Kim Ward pointed out recently that the ballot questions are, quote, clearly worded to try and get voters to vote no, end quote. Senate President pro tempore Jay Corman agreed, with a court challenge to the wording unlikely to succeed due to the political bias of the Supreme Court. He said the proponents of the amendments would concentrate on voter education. The Department of State has bungled a number of ballot issues, most notably failing to properly advertise an amendment that would have expanded the window for child sexual abuse victims to file civil lawsuits. As a result of their ineptitude, that question will not appear on the May ballot. The department also improperly worded the so-called Marcy's Law ballot question dealing with victims' rights, which resulted in that measure being voided by the courts. Corman is correct in focusing on voter education. Voters need to know the proposed amendments are all about restoring not only the balance of power between the three branches of government, but in a larger sense, restoring the rights and freedoms of every Pennsylvanian. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. It is once again time to be talking about the 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. After being virtual last year, an in-person conference will be held June 11th and 12th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of conservative activists each year here in the Keystone State. This year's featured speakers will be Jesse Waters, host of Waters World on the Fox News Channel, Fox News contributor Jason Chaffetz, along with John Gizzi of Newsmax. Complete information and registration for the 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference can be found at paleadershipconference.org. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.